Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. Wow, so much has happened in the political realm this summer. You know, we've had a debate where we saw President Biden, how do I politely say it, lose his train of thought occasionally. We've had successful calls for him to resign and then pull out of the race from his own party. Then we have former President Trump shot live on television. The Republican convention, and they announced the hillbilly elegy author as the vice president choice. This guy once called then-candidate Trump a moral disaster and possibly America's Hitler. He changed his mind quickly, though. He liked the way Trump was managing the office he attained to. And we had a stunning display. I don't think I've ever seen so much unity among Republicans. Even Van Jones admitted that the Republicans were unified. Then we have President Biden get COVID and he drops out of the race by tweet. He tweets that he's on, and the race is on between Vice President Harris and former President Trump. And I guess right now it's Harris. We won't know until we see the convention in Chicago. And what can we expect? How will this impact us? How will it impact the stock market? Joining me this morning is my dear friend, colleague, and co-host, Mike Carter. Welcome, Mike.
Great to be here, Kevin. In fact, I've been kind of excited to get together with you and say, okay, what does all this mean politically to me financially?
Yeah, well, we're not trying to be political. You hit the right tone. We're trying to be financial. We're not endorsing one candidate over another. But this is such a big thing in the headlines, it's hard to ignore. And the choice that America makes this November does have some pretty big implications for our future. Don't you feel that?
Oh, absolutely. And I watched the Republican convention and I heard Van Jones say he hadn't seen anything since Obama's election like this in terms of unity and vision and enthusiasm. And then we've watched now things completely change with a whole new presidential candidate. So it's interesting times. And we know there's always tie-ins between what goes on politically and what happens financially. So it'll be kind of fun to talk about that a little bit.
There are. And we have truly contrasting ideologies. Not always the case. I mean, it felt like with Obama versus McCain or Obama versus Romney that you're going to get, you know, a light version or a heavy version. But it's really the same recipe. Or Bush versus Gore or Bush versus Kerry, Clinton Dole or Clinton Bush. Other than the Trump campaigns, I think you have to go back to Reagan Carter or Reagan Mondale to get a big gap of difference of the way people are acting.
Yeah. And I remember vaguely Mondale. I was a little kid in grade school and not Mondale.
Carter and
grade school.
Nixon, Humphrey.
Humphrey. Yeah, there's some kid next to me. He's always talking about Humphrey. I'm like, who's this Humphrey guy? And my parents quickly kind of helped me understand what was going on with politics as I think I was 6 or 7 years old back then.
So. Yeah, so yes, that would be right. Nixon Humphrey would have been a 1968 campaign, and then it was Nixon McGovern, which would have been the 1972 campaign. You had big gaps of political philosophy there. You know, Nixon not as conservative necessarily as people thought he was, but certainly liberal. McGovern. And, you know, I remember George McGovern said, I'm going to give every man, woman, and child $1,000. And my cousins and a lot of friends said, vote for him. I want my $1,000. That was back when it meant something.
Yeah. That same kid, I remember, I think I was, third or fourth grade by then. And he was a big McGovern guy. And so that helped me kind of get acclimated to politics just because he was so on the other side of what I heard. In my case, my parents kind of talk on the other side.
So. Yeah, well, you'd have then my daughter or our daughters would have been Bernie Sanders. Not that they were supporting Bernie Sanders, but that would have been the candidate most like McGovern in 72. All right, you know, right now I think the election is looking more like a Reagan-Carter election because so much of the Biden presidency seems to resemble Jimmy Carter days. You know, we were both in high school.
That's one I can really remember.
Yeah, we were in high school at that time when Carter was president. Wow, that's dating us a little bit, isn't it?
Yes, time goes by fast. I remember when Carter won, and I think I was a freshman then, and how disappointing that was to me. And I remember my grandfather, who was a Republican at the time, voted for Carter because well, I just thought we needed a Carter in the White House. I'm like, what? How could you do that?
he was Jimmy Carter, Georgia peanut farmer. It was a Georgia governor. Interesting guy. But what reminds me so much of that election, which would have been the 1980 election, is we have American hostages in the Middle East. Or connected to Iran being hostages. We have a period of much higher inflation, and we have a conflict then with the Soviets, now with the Russians. Is that the first campaign you really remember, or do you go all the way back to grade school days?
No, that's the one that I was really involved in kind of following and active, and very sad when I saw something for myself personally in a Carter administration, and super excited when Reagan came in. And Reagan had the type of vision that I just thought was, he had that charisma to him and the way of saying things that he was one that I just had a great time following. And we saw what happened from there.
You know, I've never had a president with the same last name as me. Did your friends give you a hard time about that?
Well, more my brother, whose name was Jim. So
Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter. Look at that. So you weren't Billy, though.
No, thank goodness.
For those of you who are far too young to remember, Billy Carter was, how shall we say it, the ne'er-do-well would be the old-timey term, brother. You know, his big smiles, and he had his own brand of beer. And my in-laws bought some Billy beer and kept it. They thought it was going to be worth a fortune someday. And, you know, the Billy can beer eventually exploded and made a mess. But I digress. What are some similarities that you see between the campaign I first remember, which is 1968, Nixon versus Humphrey, and you mentioned you had a buddy there. Do you remember anything about 1968? You were pretty close. You grew up in Illinois, right?
Yeah, I was northwest of Chicago there. I remember seeing on the news the riots, but I was not really tracking what was going on at the time.
Well, the leading candidate on the Democratic ticket in 1968, because the sitting president decided not to run, and the leading candidate was a guy named Robert F. Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother, and he got shot in June of that year. Now, similarity, Trump gets shot in July. Trump survived. Kennedy passed away. His son is now running for president. So there's another similarity in 1968. The Democrat convention is held in Chicago in August 1968, here in August again. Going to be hot. It's hot in Chicago, isn't it, in August?
It can be very hot.
Then we have a sitting president that decided not to run for re-election because he seemed unelectable. So the vice president gets the nod. In this case, it's a candidate with last name beginning with H, Harris, versus Humphrey, who was the vice president then. And there's a lot of strife on the left and riots and unrest and everything. You know, the Democratic Party seems very divided today. They were certainly divided in 1968.
Yeah. All right. So we're seeing history kind of repeating itself. We could look at some impact of that maybe economically back then, but are we going to get into that a little bit today?
Absolutely. Like? We're going to get down into that. But I think we got to set the stage that history, it doesn't always repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And if this isn't a rhyme, I don't know what is. In fact, this rhyme is so strong, it's like a third grader's poetry, right? This is really heavy in the rhyme business. So here's an NBC Chicago News article that came out. The title is Party Like It's 1968, History Repeats Itself, Biden Decision Throws Chicago DNC Into Uncertain Future. President Biden's decision to withdraw from the presidential race just 1 month ahead of the Democrat National Convention in Chicago draws an incredible parallel to a previous event that was also held in Illinois. Biden's decision to no longer seek the nomination of his party throws the doors open to another candidate to step up and grab the mantle of the Democratic Party, with Vice President Kamala Harris seeming the front runner after getting the president's endorsement Sunday. Did you see that when he endorsed her? I guess it was in a tweet, but did you?
Well, I didn't see him, and that was the surprising part.
Yeah, no, he stayed hidden for quite a while, didn't he? Yeah. but he puts it out in a tweet. All right, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the 1968 Democratic Convention and what we can learn from it and apply today with our money.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
All right, so I looked up on the History Channel, Mike, history.com, to see what the convention of 1968 was like. It was held August 26th through 29th in Chicago, Illinois, as delegates flowed into the International Amphitheater, and again, I'm quoting history.com, to nominate a Democratic Party presidential candidate. Tens of thousands of protesters swarmed the streets to rally against, in this case, the Vietnam War and the political status quo. By the time Vice President Humphrey received the presidential nomination, the strife within the Democratic Party was laid bare, and the streets of Chicago had seen riots and bloodshed involving protesters. You were alive. You remember seeing some of that on the news.
I remember seeing it on the news, and didn't make much of it, though. I was still a kid thinking, man, I'm glad I'm not in Chicago right now.
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad I'm not in Chicago most of the time. I apologize to our Chicago-based listeners there, but so much has gone on. So much strife and turmoil and murders, and it's just ugly time.
And it used to be a spectacular place to go to Miracle Mile and the shopping and the Christmas stuff that was there. I don't know that I go there today, but it's been a while since I've been up that way. So,
yeah. Well, do you think we're going to see outside the convention? Now we've got the war in Gaza, and you got people on both sides that are arguing that. Do you stand with Israel? Do you stand opposed to them? Then is the Democratic Party far enough to the left, or maybe they need to get more progressive in their socialism push? Or, you know, do you think we'll have riots this year?
Well, it's interesting now that you've got a candidate for President Harris.
Yeah.
Does that shift things? Does she tends to be much more progressive left coming from San Francisco? Does that give her a break with some of those that are riding against Israel and the Palestinian thing? I don't know.
She actually has a pretty mixed, she was a prosecutor, it's a pretty mixed record in that as a prosecutor, she was putting a lot of people in jail for minor things, mm-hmm. which seemed like the heavy hand of the state. But then during the Black Lives Matter thing, she was raising bail money, encouraging people, you know, you can go protest. I will bail you out. That's the implication I got. That's what it felt like to me. Yeah. All right. So why are we talking?
We can see the results in San Francisco of all that today.
Oh my gosh, yes. And you know, San Francisco, speaking of once great cities, mm-hmm. Chicago was a once great city. San Francisco was, where remain pretty good cities. Those like, I think, you know, Miami's very vibrant with the Latin community. I think Dallas and the oil and the Texas attitudes and things. There are still a few great cities, but there are a lot of them that have really lost their luster.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you lose law and order, you let legalized robbery, everything else, it becomes a mess very quickly.
Well, and it's also tax policy. So you asked if we're going to get into the implications. Yeah, implications, yeah. We talk politics, but it impacts our lives. One of them is taxation. One of the things that's coming up, the Biden administration has said they would let the Trump tax cuts expire. The Harris administration certainly would let the Trump tax cuts expire. What would that mean? Well, one of those is the corporate income tax. In America, our corporate income tax is a flat 21%. It's barely below the worldwide average of 23.37%. Prior to the passage of that Tax Cut and Jobs Act, it was 35%. Right now, the U.S. is 81st out of 225 nations in terms of corporate taxes. Once you incorporate state taxes. So we're not the cheapest place to do business, but we're certainly not the most expensive. If we went back to 35%, we would be close to the most expensive.
That scares me a little bit if I look at just the case studies in California where we said, okay, well, let's look at fast food industry, a $20 minimum wage, and we're seeing people getting laid off. We're seeing all kinds of economic turmoil. We're seeing restaurants look at how to reduce their labor, go to robotics. We're seeing record prices where people are going through drive-thrus saying, it cost me $40 to get the family meal. I'm driving home and cooking it myself now.
And you're also seeing these innovative businesses. Like, what did Elon just do? Elon Musk, one of the wealthiest men in the world, just pulled out X, which is the artist formerly known as Twitter, and SpaceX.
Yeah, coming to Texas.
Yeah. So when you raise the corporate tax in a jurisdiction, chances are companies will be more likely to move. Is that kind of logical?
Yeah.
Well, what if we raise it throughout the entire United States to 35% plus the state corporate taxes? So you're going to be among the most high-priced, high-tax jurisdictions in the world. What are companies going to do? Are they going to stay in America or look elsewhere?
Yeah, a good chance they're going to look elsewhere. Didn't we already go through this model back during the Trump administration where he lowered that? And we saw corporations moving at least profits and stuff back to the U.S.
Bringing their money back to America. Yeah, no, what happens is you might keep your name in name only, your corporation in name only in America, but then all your business and all the profits go through subsidiaries that are in various lower tax jurisdictions.
Called tax planning, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's why. I mean, people do that. If you see higher taxes in California, don't you think about moving to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, a zero tax state? A lot of people have done that.
I did it when we used to do some of my corporate moves. I went to our corporate attorney and said, listen, I don't want to have to pay any taxes in my previous state because they're taxing people as they move out on capital gains in their house. So I want to make sure that I structure this thing the right way and do it. That accountant got all mad at me and said, that's tax evasion. We can't do it. I was like, would you talk to the corporate attorney for me? And the corporate attorney quickly said, that's not tax evasion. That's tax planning. That's
Every
person does.
Yeah, well, people and the esteemed justice, he wasn't on the Supreme Court. He was just one below, but he wrote an impressive tax decision. And he said, essentially, people have the right to organize their taxes in such a way as to minimize them.
Yeah.
It's happening. If you raise tax on corporations, by the way, even if the corporation stays, what are they going to do? They're going to pass it along. I mean, that's exactly what Arby's restaurant had to close in Los Angeles. But the McDonald's that are staying open, what are they doing so that they can afford to pay their workers more?
They're raising prices.
That's exactly right. So if you increase the cost to a business, they will pass the costs along if they possibly can. So it actually hurts the poorest people among us the very most. I mean, if they raise the price of a Big Mac, most people can handle a $6 Big Mac instead of a $5 Big Mac. But there are some people who can't.
Yeah.
Some people who depend on that. In fact, I think it was a friend of ours out of Florida who pointed out that wherever McDonald's has gone, and whatever nations, they've improved the standard of living because people can afford to eat better at a low price. That's not true if you have high taxes.
And we're seeing that pricing elasticity already. You know, I'm going into fast food restaurants right now, and I'm seeing value meals, 10 value meals under $10 now.
Under $10. That's a value meal?
But they're trying, and then I see others trying to say, well, we got to figure out how to bring the dollar menu back, which McDonald's corporate is doing. But the franchisees are saying, well, wait a second, we can't make enough money to do that.
Money.
So the brand guy's saying, well, we got to drive the top line. The guy that's operating the store says, but I got a bottom line, and it's a conflict, and it's not working.
Yeah, the whole idea is we'll make it up in volume.
Yeah.
we'll sell below cost, but we'll make it up in volume. That doesn't work. So what happens is that when corporate income taxes are raised, studies have shown that they hurt young workers, the low-skilled and women, and other groups that face significant barriers to working the most. They have limited transportation, high child care costs, or whatever. The higher the corporate tax, it hurts the people it's supposed to help, or at least that they say it's going to help the most. And that's according to the Tax Foundation, who bears the burden of the corporate income tax. So what else we got going on there? If we have one administration, they have said they're going to raise taxes. Another administration has said they're going to fight to keep the existing lower taxes in place. And that's a contrast. And that's what people vote on. If you want the higher taxes, you need to vote for one party. If you want the lower taxes, you need to vote for the other party. But those are practical economic things. Another practical—
Can I vote twice or do I just get one?
No. We don't ever say that. You only vote once. We believe in exercising your vote and you absolutely should vote, but no cheating.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that. Yeah. I just want to emphasize how important that is.
It is. You can say you need to vote twice. You shouldn't vote twice. All right, so here's the next area, regulation. You remember that show we did on regulation not long ago?
Yeah, I'm still wishing that I had that average income of what I should be having.
And do you remember what it was?
I want to say I was over 300. Was it 330 or something?
330,000.
That number stuck in my mind.
All right, so the average family now is something like $64,000, the average income for the average family. If we had regulation at 60 year ago compared to today, the average income would be $330,000. That was the Reason Foundation. And it really, here's a perfect example, and I'm going to pick on Texas right now, and that is government policies hiked Texas electricity costs by almost $20 billion last year. Government imposed electricity costs rose from 6.78% of total electricity costs in 2014 to 41.24% in 2021. So in 7 years, they hiked the costs from 7% to 41%.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen that in my utility bill. I mean, and it's kind of like, when you boil the frog, you don't, if 1 year to the next, not too bad. The next year, well, it's still reasonable. All of a sudden, I looked at the bill the other day, and I was like shocked. I'm like, how could my bill be this? Do I have a window that's broken? Do I have something going on? No, it's the rate of utilities.
No, it's the same thing with property taxes. They just raise them every year, and pretty soon you realize you're renting your house even if you own it. Even if you paid off the mortgage, your property taxes are high enough, at least in Texas. All right, so here's another issue, the national debt, and both parties spend way too much money. I'm going to put that right out there. But I looked at a chart on the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. It showed deficit trends over time, comparing Trump to Biden. And we know President Biden's not running. He's not on the ticket now. But the Trump average deficit, which is way too high, $809 billion a year for the first 3 years before COVID, versus the first 3 years after COVID under the Biden administration. What is that? $1.5 trillion. We're spending $1.5 trillion versus $809 billion more than we take in. That's a pretty serious jump.
That's huge. And I did, speaking of huge, I heard Trump at the Republican convention.
Huge.
He was actually talking about, he at least recognized we have a lot of debt. I think he called it $36 trillion. We're not quite there yet. But and you know, we need to fix that. I don't remember him talking about that before.
Well, no, I don't think he did. In fact, he ran up debt. He's a real estate guy. Debt's good, right? But he's starting to realize it's a problem. We have $35 trillion in debt. The natural interest rate's close to 5%. That's $1.75 trillion in interest only. That's bad for either party. It's bad for our nation. Both parties need to get fiscally responsible. But that's a part of what we're going to vote on. Do we want more debt or less debt? It is one of the economic implications of politics. We're going to study this and inflation right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, we're talking politics. We're talking the economic implications of politics. We're not endorsing candidates here. We're not giving financial advice. We're just talking about the reality. And, you know, in the opening, it said, give, spend, and invest. That there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, spend it, or invest it. And here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and they operate on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And why would you look around at a different phone company? Well, one of the reasons people look around is inflation. You talk about that creep of bills going up. And, you know, it just seems like the cost of everything, whether it's your cell phone bill or your car payment or whatever, it seems like they've been going up more recently than they did before. Is that right?
They've definitely been doing that. Now I'm ready for a different pathway. So yeah. Whatever that is, I did hear also in that Trump convention, I'm interested to hear what a presidential elect or candidate Harris has to say, but I heard Trump say, "I'm not expecting enough good things," so I'm ready to be expecting that.
Yeah, no, I want to be expecting good things, but the reason is over the previous few years we've seen inflation running at a pretty high level,
and that beats you down.
It does beat you down. And so what we're talking about in terms of inflation is it's been much higher under President Biden than it was under Trump. Now, part of that's COVID. Part of it is just the natural cycle of things. But it's hard to make that comparison when you've had felt virtually, I think it was 7.5% cumulative inflation under President Trump, and we've had about 20% cumulative inflation under President Biden.
But I thought the Green New Deal meant we'd get more money. No.
You know, we did the Inflation Reduction Act. And from the moment that that was passed, and again, this is policy. And what we're talking about is economic policy of an administration has a direct impact on our wallet. So when we vote, we need to vote for a whole lot of things. The candidate that you most agree with, you want to talk about defense, you want to talk about all these different things. But one of the things you need to take into account is what will their policies do? When people are offering you free stuff, when my daughter was in third grade, she had a friend who wanted to support the candidate offering her free stuff. And she says, "How does the government have free stuff to give you? Where do they get their money?" Well, they get it from us in taxes or from our children in the form of debt that they'll pay taxes on.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what other things do you think will impact people in terms of economics?
Economics? Or did we talk about just jobs in general?
No, let's talk about jobs.
Okay.
Biden has actually had a really good record on jobs during this administration, but there's a little twist to it, right?
Yeah, I think it has something to do with what kind of jobs those are and who's paying for them.
Yeah, what kind of jobs are they?
I'm afraid it's government jobs, more government jobs.
Government makes up about 30% of the nation's job growth from the past year. That was out from Jarrett Lewis on June 13th. Based on the Department of Labor, show that 2.1 million new jobs were created in the past year. One third of them were government jobs.
So when I hear on the news all this stuff about the economy's growing and improving and jobs look good, this is a little bit like our money. We can just print more of that, or on jobs, we just kind of create our own government jobs.
Yeah, government jobs. Unfortunately, you can't let people go on government jobs, and so if their job goes away, they stay on the pay, right?
Yeah.
And that lends itself to the inflation.
There are great government service provider employees out there. They're doing great things.
But excellent.
When
point.
You start getting those kind of overheads on there, 30% of the new jobs are all government jobs. They're taking more of their fair share of the jobs right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, I don't want to say anything negative about somebody that's protecting our country or protecting its infrastructure or providing Social Security checks to people that need them or doing any air quality. There's so many important things that government does, but our government should not be equal to one third of all the new job openings. There's something wrong with the economy when the only jobs that are out there are becoming government jobs.
And that drives debt up because, as we've talked before on the show, the government's not producing anything. They're spending the money that we're giving them. And now we're spending more money to pay more overheads. And are we getting any of the right things in return, I guess is the question.
Yeah, no. And speaking of questions, if you have questions, you can send them to us. We'll answer them on the air at afr@piratemoneyradio.com, or we'll answer them by email. But you send your questions to afr@piratemoneyradio.com. And if you're not able to listen on Saturday morning when we air on the American Family Radio Network, you can always get us on your podcasts at afr.net or piratemoneyradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And by the way, I want to point out, we're not giving financial advice. You need to check with your own financial advisor. See what's good or what's not good for you. But we do want to talk about the impact of politics on the stock market.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's something that all of us have in the back of our minds. You know, you start looking at even when you start shifting presidential candidates this late in the election, there's a geopolitical impact to that. And tying that to what does that mean to my investments? What should I be thinking about? What should I do with that? That's where, you know, I hope that, you know, I want to have a financial advisor that understands those things and calculates that into that game plan.
That's right. And you work with financial advisors and they want to help people, yep. Right?
Yes, they do. They do. And they are going through, many of them within our NSIC Institute are going through classes and getting updates and saying, okay, what are the types of things we need to be thinking about now?
Well, one of the things you can think about now is from 1926 to 2023, we've had a Republican administration for 47 years and a Democrat administration for 51 years.
Amazing. And that pendulum just kind of swings back and forth, doesn't it? That's pretty even.
Yeah, no, it is pretty even. But here's the thing. If you start back from 1926 and you look at it, actually, surprisingly to some people, Democrat administrations have done better in performance for the S&P 500, averaging 14.8% per year versus 9.3% for Republican administration. The quote here is, to put it mildly, that is a big difference.
Yeah.
Does that shock you?
A little bit, although I think some of that's cyclical and timing. I know we see great innovations help drive an economy. So I guess when Al Gore invented the internet, that probably worked the Democratic Party's advantage at some point when Clinton came in, something like that.
Well, I'm sure that had something to do with it. You know what else had something to do with it is they started in 1926, right before the great crash of 1929 happened on a Republican's watch. And so the impact of that crash is so severe. And then in 2008, right at the tail end of the Bush administration, same thing, the 2008 financial crisis. You take those two out, and it's probably pretty close to dead even.
Yeah, good point. I do feel for whoever wins this next election. It seems like we've got a lot of instability out there in the markets, from this inflation to our record debt. It doesn't necessarily look like easy times ahead for whoever wins presidency next.
That's right. And you know what? It's kind of funny. People will make that comparison historically, and then they will compare whether the party started a war. And believe it or not, the Democratic Party is famous for having the wars begin during their tenure. Sometimes it's just the circumstances of life. So I looked at another study from Retirement Researcher, .com, and they compared whether it was a unified Republican, unified Democrat, or divided Republican president with a Democrat House, or divided with a Democrat president. And the number one performer, barely, was a unified Republican Party, 13 years, 14.5% average annual return. A unified Democrat over 36 years that a 14.01% return. A divided Republican administration, so Republican president and Democrat Congress, 7.33%. And the best performing of all was a Democrat president with a Republican Congress. And, you know, that's what happened when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House. Hmm. And they cut our debt and deficit. And that was a 16% return over those 15
years.
Real
politicians that did what they said they were going to do. Let's get some more of those out there.
Yeah, we do need some more politicians that are going to do what they're... But, you know, politics is not... It is a blood sport. It is not a glamour contest. And I say that, you know, not intending to make light of the fact that the former president was shot. But when he was shot, the betting odds shifted remarkably to Trump's direction. Big tech, the big tech firms, they dropped because of the fear that the big tech companies that are in bed with the Biden administration and Obama before them might not get as much love. And small cap stocks strengthened because they thought Trump would win. Now, when Biden pulled out and the betting odds shifted and Harris began to start raising money and consolidate, big tech stocks started to recover. So don't think that this doesn't have a direct impact on your investments. How you invest is in large part connected to who's sitting in the White House and who's sitting in the Congress.
Yeah. And I would guess along with that, even the value of our dollar based upon their policies out there. So we talk pirate money. We talk about stable value of currencies and so forth, the policies of each one of these candidates is going to make a difference there.
No, and it's going to determine which industries succeed, which industries fail. You know, we see that. You think, well, politics has nothing to do with the stock market. Well, then how come the politicians who have inside knowledge and information about what they're going to vote on make themselves wealthy? Do you remember that? We did a study of that with Nancy Pelosi. And
between that, if I could invest like a politician and have no regulations and make the average income with no regulations, life would be pretty good.
You'd be Elon Musk moving Twitter or X. I'm sorry, I still say Twitter. You'd be moving X and SpaceX. Yeah. What if they changed it to X and Space Twitter?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Elon's got a fascination with that. If I ever meet him, I'm going to ask him, what is your fascination with the letter X? I like X. X marks the spot for pirate money treasure.
There you are. That's good. You know, you look at the economy and what you just showed, Republican, Democrat, overall, the markets have been doing all right, no matter who's in charge. Although we might be coming up against some bigger challenges than we have before. It might not be a market like we had before. Well, and that's something else to factor into this.
That's a really good point, because 1920s, it seemed like the market was fantastic. You know, roaring 20s, everything was go, 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 and wonderful. But all that was a setup to the Great Depression, starting with a stock market crash. So you're right. Things can change, and they can change rather quickly. And part of that change will be determined by who the American people put into the White House for the next term and what kind of Congress they send them. Again, we're not endorsing politicians. We're just talking about the impact it's going to have on you, your family, and especially your money. We'll be right back.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, we're talking about politics. This is probably the most tumultuous political season that we've had since more than 50 years. One candidate shot. You've got a Kennedy running in the race. You've got a sitting president who stands down. I'm not running. And the vice president gets kind of thrust in there. This is a very, very challenging political environment. And the one candidate that's coming back was already elected president. Yeah. You know, that's not happened in my lifetime. You know, we're harkening back to 1968, but maybe even before that, where you've got one candidate coming back after having won, then lost, then coming again. So what is that going to do for your 401k? I looked it up. In fact, I did a web search for exactly that, and CBS News has the answer. It says, Biden out, Kamala Harris, what it means for the economy, Trump trade, and here's the headline. Here's what investors are saying about Biden dropping out and what it means for your 401k. Wow.
And this is CBS News.
CBS News, right-handed to me.
I'm sure they've done a lot of analysis on this.
Oh, yeah. So they talk about the Trump trade versus the Harris economic views. The Trump trade is actually, Jim, you know, you watch Mad Money ever?
Oh, yeah, Jim Cramer. Oh, we had him on the radio show here a couple weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, not willingly. We clipped him, but Jim
Cramer. Financial terrorism. Could be financial terrorism. I remember that.
Yeah,
Mad
Money is one entertaining program. There's a lot of entertainment. It used to be Cramer and Kudlow. And Kudlow, by the way, is a Trump advisor, one of the top Trump advisors. But it used to be Cramer and Kudlow, and Cramer's just getting, he makes you want to pull your hair out, but I think he's already pulled his hair out, and he's just ranting, and he doesn't age ever either. But he talked about the Trump trade. And I want to read what CBS News said. To be sure, many institutional investors are still giving Trump the inside track, regardless if he runs against Harris or any other Democratic opponent. Election odds have dipped slightly for Trump, while Harris odds have jumped 11 percentage points. Well, that helps when your primary opposition drops out of the race. Not that he was in opposition, but you know they already had Harris over Biden just because of his performance at that debate. Although she's still trailing Trump. Well, this was what the date on this is July 22nd. So keep that in mind. According to Polymarket, the new odds have shifted some of investors' focus away from the Trump trade, which appears to be fading in the aftermath of Biden's decision to pull out. For instance, with Trump viewed as favorable toward cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin had surged more than 50% this year so far. But the Monday after Biden pulled out, Bitcoin prices slid 1.5%. while other cryptocurrencies lost ground. What do you think the Trump trade is or should be?
The Trump trade?
Yeah. What's going to do well in the Trump administration? Take a guess. And again, we're not giving financial advice.
I hope what he said is going to in day one, which would be oil in terms of drilling.
Drill. You know, yeah.
I think that will,
drill,
will potentially
baby, drill.
Be it. Yeah, that was one of the platform things I remembered. But the Trump on the trade side, what else? I think he's going to be a little more hard on some of our foreign trade with China and things like that. There might be some tariffs. We might see some manufacturing shifting back. Those are the promises, at least, that he talked about.
The things that immediately popped to mind. Yeah, and he talked about other nations paying for their own portion of their defense. Mm-hmm. So defense industries, perhaps. There are certain things that happen. One thing that was a big one that doesn't have anything to do with your 401k, but it does have to do with the average person. I was pleasantly shocked because I think it's a really interesting concept. I'm so sick of everywhere I turn, they're trying to charge me a tip. On the other hand, I'm pleasantly surprised that maybe we won't be taxing gratuities.
I'm sure that's going to resonate with a lot of that consumer out there, that American that makes money on tips. And then to his point, he's like, I didn't hire a consultant to figure this out. I had a waitress explain it to me. I thought, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good Trumpism.
It's progressive in that wealthy people tend to pay tips and poor people tend to receive tips, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way it works. And so we're going to reduce the friction and the tax cost of the people receiving them if you make tips, which is right. If I walk up to someone on the street and say, I want to give you $100, I want to give it to you as a gift, I care about you and I want to give it to you, I think gifts are tax exempt up to a certain mm-hmm. amount.
Yes.
So why can't you give a gift to someone who's serving you?
That makes sense.
It does. So again, you got to look at your situation. Maybe you don't want tips to be tax exempt. I think a restaurant owner would want that because that helps them get more higher quality labor. I think the Uber driver would want that because they're getting tipped for their driving. I think the giver doesn't care. Because it's money out of my pocket. It doesn't matter to me whether it's taxed or not. Maybe I can give a little less. So maybe, yeah, and it has a strong impact. You know, instead of giving 25%, I give 20%. But if it's tax free, maybe I don't know. It's who gets hurt?
I'll admit that for that hardworking waiter or waitress that really impresses me, there's been times I've left them cash tips to do whatever they want to do with that because I think there's a higher perceived value to that. Then if it goes in the card, and I did hear percentage of people, waiters and waitresses that actually get cash tips is very low now. Everybody puts everything on a card. And so it's harder and harder for them to get that money even. So this might make that all a little bit simpler and seamless.
No, I think it's good. The looser in it would be the taxing authorities mm-hmm. or government, which is employing, you know, we talked about that earlier, 1/3 of the new jobs that are being created are government jobs. Nothing wrong with government jobs, but really, that's not the area of our economy we want to grow. We want the government to be lean and efficient. And I want government workers to have decent job stability. I want them to earn decent money. But I don't want that to be the growth sector because government is not, government growth hinders the economy. Other businesses growing, that helps the economy.
Absolutely. We want that innovation. We want less regulation so we can derive more innovation that gives us clean air and clean water, new ideas that can really move things forward. And we want a strong defense. We want our military men and women taken care of. And like I said, the government employees that are doing the services that need to be done, we want that. But we don't need to be growing an excessive amount of overhead at the expense of $36 trillion in debt.
Right. It, I personally believe that innovation is the best way to solve problems like pollution and so forth, and not mandates. Other people may disagree with me, but I have to admit, as we're talking about the stock market, The Biden stock market has been pretty strong, and it's favored NVIDIA and artificial intelligence and big tech companies. In fact, they're called the Magnificent Seven. 493 companies in the S&P 500 last year produced, well, I guess in the first 6 months of this year, produced half the gains, and the other half the gains were split among the elite top Magnificent Seven companies. Biden's had a good ending to his presidency so far in stock market performance. Trump, of course, faced what was happening in COVID, which killed the market initially before it rallied. So it really is, you know, one of those unusual times in history where you've got to scrutinize every little detail about a candidate versus another candidate, policy versus another policy, and then what's going on around you. So one thing that popped up, did you hear this, Mike, here's the headline, Times of India, BlackRock-linked firm under scanner for shorting of Trump stock before assassination attempt. Did you hear that conspiracy theory?
I saw that, and it wasn't even a conspiracy theory. I confirmed they actually did do it. They admitted doing it. Then they said, well, wait a second, it was a mistake. We typed in too many zeros. That should not have happened. And I was just kind of joking to myself, you know, what's the chances that if I put it too many zeros in there, they'd just say, oh, we understand that was a mistake. We're not going to hold you accountable to that trade, even though it worked way against your interest.
Yeah. So let's talk about what happened. So apparently, Texas-based investment company Austin Private Wealth bought put options, which is a bet that a stock is going to go down, against Truth Social with the symbol Trump. It's the Trump Media and Technology Group, TMTG, and they bet against the Trump business, which is one of his largest components of his wealth, and they did it on the Friday before he got shot Saturday. The only question that happened, the only question is, did they short 12 contracts or 12 million contracts? And they blamed a third-party vendor for multiplying all option contracts by 10,000. The erroneous report filed on July 12th to reflect their June 28th position was amended on July 16th. That's got to be embarrassing. At a minimum, it looks bad.
Embarrassing, and it certainly feeds the conspiracy theorists, because it's like, what are the odds that you're going to short something the day before, especially if you're a BlackRock or somebody like that?
Well, you know, we saw that in 9/11, where the airline stocks were short and the insurance companies that owned the insurance on the World Trade Center, they were sold short, and then they profited from it. Now we see that here. This is a BlackRock-linked firm, according to this article in Times of India. I've seen mentions that, you know, other politicians have been associated, the Bush family and others that aren't big fans of the Trump administration. So it looks bad, and the loss would have been startling had they shorted that many contracts. Had he been killed, on the other hand, what would have happened?
That probably would not have been a mistake. They intended to do the 12 million, and they'd be doing really well right now.
And then you see that it's a BlackRock connected building, and the shooter was in a commercial for BlackRock. Conspiracy theories are running rampant on this this thing. The scary part of it is sometimes these things are true. I'm not saying this one is true, but sometimes these things are true. We're in a really challenging world. It's an interesting election season. There's lots of fear, lots of rumors, and lots to come. I hesitate to go through the rest of this, the Democrat convention that's going to be later this month, and all the things that are associated with it. How are you feeling?
Yeah, the fact that I'm continuing to keep my hope, and I believe God is doing things, and I know we need all to be prepared. So I'm encouraged, but I see the disruption in the world, and I believe this is not like normal times out there.
Well, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but power and love and a sound mind. We've learned a little few things this morning about the economics and politics. This is something you can apply in your life when you're voting and then after the vote's taken. This is Kevin Freeman and Pirate Money Radio. Till next week.